Welcome to the United Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Smith. Thanks for joining us. I want to thank our friends at Dr. Dish. Guys, let me tell you just real quick about Dr. Dish, not just because they're a sponsor, just because they're the real deal. If you want your kids to be better shooting, because we all say shooting is the separator, you need a Dr. Dish. If you think you can't afford it, they have an interest-free one-year payment plan. I actually use that to purchase our Dr. Dish. So reach out to them at Dr. Dish B-Ball on all social media. Hey, coaches, as you know, we have United Basketball Plus, and we have a play bank of plays. So this is for the listener. If you have a quick hitter or really great play that you would like to have on the website, just send it to me at matt@unitedbasketballplus.com. I'll make a graphic, the high school, the city where it's located, your mascot, whatever you want, and I'll put your play on the website. Just email me the video link at matt@unitedbasketballplus.com. Because I know some of the best coaches in the game listen to this podcast, and you run some really good quick hitters and sets, and we'd love to showcase them on the website. Also, if you'd like to join United Basketball Plus, use the code UBPLUS. That's UB as a basketball, the word plus, to get 20% off for an annual membership, which will bring it down to about $44 for a year. We're in the process of putting more speed agility clips on there from Casey Wheel. We just added a deep dive with Ido Singer. We also did a deep dive with Stu Singer, sports psychologist for United Basketball Plus. Really, really great content. Again, guys, thanks for your loyal support of United Basketball and what we're doing here. Now let's get to the podcast. Coaches, I want to welcome Alicia Kamaki to the podcast at Sierra Canyon in California. And I believe five-time state champion, correct, Coach?
Yes.
Is that correct? Well, I want to throw that in there because, you know, people like to know if I'm talking to a championship-level coach. But thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Of course. So excited to talk hoops. Always excited.
Absolutely. And you and I have had conversations in the past. And we're going to talk tonight about running a championship-level practice, how to be efficient and effective, and just kind of clean up our practices as pretty much all of us around the country are heading to the, you know, we're in the postseason, after the season. We're planning for our summer. Some coaches are able to do things with some players now, but in the summertime, we'll all hit it pretty heavy with most of our players in the gym and go to camps and leagues, but we're also going to hold some practices and also just to get, just clean it up for the fall. So Coach, let's just talk a little bit about how long you've been at Sierra Canyon, been coaching, just a little bit about your resume, and then we'll just dive into the practice planning.
Yeah. So this is just finished my 10th season at Sierra Canyon. And it's been the only head coaching job I've actually ever had. So I've been a head coach there for 10 years. And we've been lucky enough to win number 5 for our state championship this last season. So not so bad, but all credit for sure to my players. I've had a really good group of kids year in and year out that I've been there. And so all success is definitely related to them and their buy-in and their hard work and just the culture that we've built there. So I'm excited to start year 11 next year.
Absolutely. So this year, you just recently won your 5th one?
Yes.
Okay. So that's not bad. You've been there 10 years, so you have a 50% state championship winning percentage. You know, I think I'm in year like 20 and I've had 0. So no, that's really awesome. Happy for you guys. That's really phenomenal.
Thank you.
Well, let's talk about practices. So what do you think a coach should look at first and foremost when they're planning a practice or planning a series of practices? What are some of the, I guess, cultural aspects or some things you really think are kind of like must-have ingredients for it to be a championship-level practice?
I think the first thing that a coach should do is be able to self-assess how much they're talking in practice. I think that's like a really good place to start, whether you're a 30-year veteran coach or you're a brand new coach or somewhere in between. I think that you should stop and evaluate how much you stop practice and actually kind of interrupt with a lot of talking points. It's definitely okay to stop and interrupt and teach and do that, but really kind of calculate if you're running a 2-hour practice, am I talking for an hour of it? Because then we're not really getting very much done. And I think you can, again, assess that at any point of your career. And from there, if you're like green light, you're good. You're within the 10 to 15 minute range of like actual stoppage time. We're not really interrupting too much. Because for me, the biggest thing is pace of practice. I know a lot of people right now want to play fast, and pace is very important for games. It's a high talking point. Transition is everything right now. Everybody's into fast-paced offense and transition defense and all that stuff, right? And if you don't practice the way that you play, and therefore your pace is not the same way that you're trying to get your kids to play, I think you're going to come across a little bit of trouble for that. So number one is to absolutely assess how much you're talking in practice and how much you're actually slowing down the pace of your practice. Clear that green light, and then you can actually get into the pace.
So you go back and watch your practices and you'll physically like time or count how often you stop practice. And oh my gosh, we stopped at 30 minutes in a, 2 hour practice. That's 25% of the time, and evaluate that.
Yeah, so I'm fortunate now that I'm kind of running on a well-oiled machine, that we did that once upon a time. And I'm very conscious of not stopping practices and interrupting and speaking longer than a minute, minute and a half. Again, obviously, if it's a new drill, we'll stop, we'll explain, we'll put in our instruction in key moments. But we are trying not to slow down our practice as much as possible. We are fortunate that we are able to record our practices. So we're very fortunate. I know not everybody has this opportunity. We have about 7 fixed camera angles in the gym. We have instant replay access for our practice. So a lot of what we do, instead of interrupting the whole practice for everybody, if I say, "Hey, Matt, I didn't like your closeout there. This is the angle you took, and that's why you got beat. Go see coach over there and look at it on the iPad real quick." And so we can show you why your footwork particularly was off, but we don't have to stop the whole drill
Right.
for everybody. Now take 3 minutes to re-explain something that's been explained, many times. And of course, the visualization for kids is great. We're fortunate to make video clips off of that and do different things. And I understand that's not obviously the level of technology that every coach has, especially youth coaches or high school coaches.
Right.
But there are ways to do something
Yeah.
similar, whether that's recording your practice and uploading it via platforms like Huddle or different things.
Yeah, one thing we added in our gym was the, and many coaches have this now, I'd say hundreds, if not thousands, of high schools are the NFHS cameras.
Correct.
And you can
Yep.
easily set that up and you'll get the link right when practice is over. You can go back, and I'm just saying this for coaches listening, you can edit it really quickly on iMovie or something like that and clip things up. It's a little time consuming, but not really too time consuming if you have your practice plan next to you and you can see where the time is and things like that. So that's just something we've done. We don't have the instant replay access, but we can easily go back and watch a practice and show a kid something. So when you talk about pace in practice, like how do you build that in? Like what, how do you build that? Because every coach, most coaches I talk to say they run really great practices and I watch a practice. I'm like, that's a really good practice, but it's not like there's nothing special to it. Even some college coaches I watch practice. So what did you do to build this pace? Is it the order you have your drills? Is it the transition time? It's 30 seconds or less. What are some things that you've done there?
You kind of hit on a few of the points for sure. I would say one of the maybe the smartest things we did was we have our kids know our drills. So we do quiz formations, different things where we're making sure it's a big part of our culture that our kids know our drills better than they know our plays. We practice more than we play games, right? So
Yeah.
you have to know our drills.
Right.
If we run a lot of different drills, and year in and year out, there might be a staple that we run that drill 50% of the time that we're practicing. There might be a drill that we only run 2 or 3 times, but our kids have to know our drills, and we'll do things to set them up for success in that regard. So we'll send out links. We have links to all of our drills, so they've been pre-recorded, or if I got it from somewhere else, we have a recording of that. So we'll send it out to the whole group, give them advance notice, and here's a drill that's brand new today. Watch it so you're familiar. We will explain it in practice, but make sure you know it, make sure you know the name of it, know the objective behind it. And then, we might run this drill 10 times this year, but you better be prepared for when we're going to run it in practice. So I think the knowledge, again, the less we talk, the better.
Yeah.
So our kids are already coming into practice with a familiarity of the drill, of again, the purpose of the technique and the things that we're looking for. And so we kind of take that time to do that talking off the court. Again, send it to them the night before, send it to them at school that day, make sure you guys review this by lunch, whatever. So I think that's probably something that's pretty intelligent that we're doing to save us that time and practice. And then you talked about transitioning from drill to drill. So again, we don't introduce a bunch of brand new drills, definitely not all at once.
Yeah.
So again, over the course of a year, Depends. I mean, if we need to do particular rebounding drills that year and the year before we didn't, then great. We're going to introduce 5 to 10 new rebounding drills. But we'll never do it three new drills in one practice. It's not going to go well. It's too much talking for me. I don't want to talk that much in practice. So, we'll sprinkle some new drills in throughout the season. Obviously, don't want to create boredom and all those types of things. So make sure that, again, they're going to know it before it happens. But never more than three in one day. That would be maybe even three in a week, honestly, for us is probably too many.
What's your philosophy on starting practice?
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
So first of all, we start practice with an important dynamic warm-up. So that has a variation as well. So practice starts with our stretching routine, and they all know that. So that's when practice officially starts. And we also have variation with that. Sometimes it's competitive. Sometimes it's just, again, a mix-up of routine. I find personally, and there's definitely no right or wrong way, I was the kid who grew up with the coach who did the exact same thing every single practice for 4 years, fall, spring, winter, so it didn't matter. 360 practices a year, we did the exact same thing. And for me personally, and that was 20 years ago, we hated it. We got burnt out. It was repetitive. It was boring. That was my own personal take. So I take my own experiences, try to apply it to my own coaching, and truly believe that with this generation, and you know, there's all kinds of studies, there's a short attention span, all of that, that if I were personally to do the same drill every single day, I just think I would lose my kids. They wouldn't be excited to show up anymore. So that's just my own personal philosophy. Don't do that. So we mix up our dynamic warmup. And then what we could call what we have our first drill of the day is usually always a mixture of 1 to 10 different drills that they know very well. That is some sort of warm-up, fundamental passing, light shooting, footwork, some sort of drill that combines kind of those three dimensions to get them up and down the court, to get their bodies a little bit looser out of after their dynamic warm-up. And then we go into whatever sequence of events after that. I know you mentioned a little bit earlier in terms of kind of what might make our practice a little more unique, or the pace and those different things. So there is never a set schedule in terms of we go offense to transition to defense or whatever it might be like that. But there's always a huge thought process behind the format of where we stick every single drill. If it's a defensive heavy practice, we're going to start with building up from one-on-one to twos to threes to fours to fives. Everything's extremely competitive. I have pace drills. So I literally have drills that we call pace drills that we'll sprinkle in throughout practice that just completely change the tempo, no matter what we're doing. So it could be transitioning from a shooting drill to a pace drill where we're doing something timed, competitive, target score, something that's getting them up and down the court and getting us into a fast play. So we sprinkle those throughout. But outside of that, we definitely try to at least vary our first few drills. But there is the positive side of having a drill or two drills or three or five that they are very familiar with.
Right.
So now you're starting off practice with kind of a little bit of a form of perfection, right? You want them to, it's simple, but we're getting our bodies warmed up the right way, but we're expecting something from this, whether again, that's a target score or it's a time drill or it's a perfect passing type of a drill, whatever that may be. So we don't want to throw in too much variation there because now there's too many drills for them to kind of memorize for that level of perfection.
You mentioned a minute or two ago about you do some competitive dynamic warm-up or dynamic stretching. What's an example of that? Because most coaches just do the set. Hey guys, gals, you've got 4 or 5 minutes. Do your dynamic, then your static stretching or whatever. So talk about that just a second.
So one example that more people would probably be familiar with or have seen would be the tic-tac-toe that's like a race in person, right? So we put out hula hoops and there's two teams and they both have a penny, three colors, let's just say blue team against the red team. And so they're doing a warm-up where they're actually racing, but they're having fun. So it's competitive. Now you throw in Frankensteins instead of sprinting, you throw in high knees or whatever type of dynamic warm-up that you're doing. But now they're warming up and now they're actually probably warming up a little bit harder than they would have been if it was, you know, just us putting them sideline to sideline and doing those same stretches. And then we just throw in a little bit element of competition. It could be just things like in terms of mobility, and I'm not the strength and warm up coach. So I actually have a coach who's more in charge of that for us. Mm-hmm. But it could be some form of, you know, you're just kind of pushing on each other and kind of more like a box out type of a drill, but you're working on mobility. You're working on, you know, stabilizing those different types of muscles and, you know, whatever those things might be, but we're making it a little more competitive instead of just the kids like touching their toes and walking around and doing their bear crawl, you know, whatever it might be. It allows a little element of focus and makes them dialed in a little bit more.
Yeah. I know one thing, it's a, you know, we all did this as kids, it's become popular and I've done it this past season was, you know, do 30 seconds of tag to really get moving and work on cutting and moving and just something like that, a little more fun than just, you know, circle up and count to 30 and things like that. So how many, this is, you know, probably depends on where you are in the season, but how many different things do you think you do in a practice? I mean, if you have a 2-hour practice, do you try to keep it to like 8 or 9 different drills or competitions, or what do you think is too much or too little?
So I've never really necessarily kind of like calculated down. I don't have a number in mind basically. So I've never told myself, hey, I got to stay within 10 drills, 15 drills. But if I were to really think about it, cause I never really go over my line allotment in my Google spreadsheet. So it's probably somewhere, around 15 different, let's call it activities, throughout practice for throughout a 2-hour practice. And that would include 2 water breaks counting as an activity. So somewhere along those lines, I do have a rule that for me personally, a drill is never going to last longer than 12 minutes. And 15 is actually a stretch, but there's one particular thing that we do that will go on for 15 minutes. But it's incredibly mixed up throughout the drill. So it doesn't really ever seem or feel like 15 minutes. We're going over another team's offensive sets ultimately. So nothing for us will ever last longer than 12 minutes.
Okay. And again, you mentioned this a little while back. I'm trying to go back and gather everything you've said. You mentioned how you had a strong culture. What are some of your cultural, standards or pillars, some coaches call them, that are kind of reflecting how you run practice? And these are this is who we are as a team, and this is how we're going to practice and play and act. I mean, how does culture transfer to your practices?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, so for us, I know you mentioned the words, you know, standards, those types of things. So we have what we call expectations, and then we have essentials. So our expectations for us are the things that get, I think the strongest part of a culture is that it should be getting passed down from group to group, right? From team to team, from senior class to the next senior class. And so for me, that's the biggest part of our culture. These are the things that are my expectations of our team, of my players, that I shouldn't ever really have to say or speak of because they've been passed through the last 10 years. So those things that get reiterated specifically in practice, we count the clock. So there's a clock on every single drill and we count it down no matter what we're doing. We're doing a 1-minute closeout drill. As soon as it hits 10, we're counting it out. When it gets to 45, they're all very well aware of 45 seconds. Hey, 30, 30's on the clock. Hey, we're at 15. At 10, every single person in the gym is counting. When it's any time that we actually have a ball, and most often, it's almost every single drill. Let's just say it's a ball handling drill and all 12 of them have a basketball. Everybody's going to get a shot off in that gym when time's up. So that's a very big part of our culture that we know time and score as well as anybody else in the country. And it's because we practice it 15 times a day in every single drill that we do. So that's an expectation. Eye contact and talking with coach and respecting anybody, whether you're in a hotel, you're on the bus, or in a classroom at school. So eye contact is a huge expectation of ours. So of course that's occurring in pre-practice conversations and any stoppage of drills that's going on. We have our kind of culture buzzwords that we use. And so one thing that we do that might be slightly unique, I know a lot of coaches like to have a quote of the day. So what we do is we have a culture word of the day. So we have my personal words, and then I actually let the team usually choose words. We do different activities throughout the year. So a good example would be we have them describe what the ultimate leader looks like. And let's just say one of those qualities is a great communicator. So that gets added onto my drop-down list of culture words. So instead of a quote of the day, we have a culture word of the day. So pre-practice is real quick. I tell them the culture word of the day. And then we have another little aspect that we discuss, and then boom, we're right into practice. So we say today, we're all going to be great communicators. Now they hear that word. We probably have about 15 words that are on recycle. So now you're hearing that word on a 15 cycle rotation throughout the year, instead of a quote that you might not remember. So that's a kind of a big part of how we kind of instill our culture and continue to bring it up constantly on a day-to-day thing in practice. So going back to essentials and expectations, those are a few of our expectations. And then our essentials are actually player driven. So those are things that the team decides are characteristics that are going to be essential to our team's success that year. Maybe it's fantastic communication. Maybe we're already really good at that. So maybe next year, fantastic communication isn't necessarily going to be an essential for us. It might be something that this team decides. So the last season's team decided that we were going to be in elite shape, and that was going to help us win a state championship. We were going to have meticulous preparation. So that's going to be meticulously prepared for practice, meticulously prepared for games. And so they come up with those things on their own. So we have about 5 or 6 of those things this year, and those get thrown into that culture thing as well. So kind of how we drive our culture into practice. It's all those things that you see and believe and that we talk about on a daily basis. They're definitely getting reiterated in practice.
So as the players come up with this list of essentials, is it more senior led? Is it on a retreat? Like, how do you get, is the coach not in the room when they're doing this? Talk about how the process of that, because I know some coaches kind of perked up when they heard that. They love that idea, but sometimes you've got a senior laden team. Do you let the sophomore also be involved in this process? So talk about that if you don't mind.
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. And, it's people ask me questions like that, and I think my answer kind of sucks, to be honest. I'm a very instinctual coach in everything that I do. So I have the things that I like. I have the things that I know that work, but I am very quickly to switch it if I think it's not going to work for that team. But ultimately, to answer your question, we do what we call a leadership academy. And so we spend a lot of time specifically in the preseason, and where we purposely don't get on the court, we get into the classroom instead. And this is where we really hammer home our culture. And we talk about the things that are important to us, and we kind of disguise it in ways that doesn't make it feel like it's like this big classroom type of setting, a bunch of various activities, which I'm happy to share with anybody. I got a bunch of random ideas that we've done throughout the years. And this is where we really talk about it. Sometimes it's a coach in there leading it. Sometimes it's a PowerPoint presentation. Sometimes it's a guest speaker. Sometimes it's an activity outside of a classroom. We're doing some sort of a scavenger hunt, but we're bringing home that main idea. And I will say that it is definitely not senior led, but it's leadership led. Yeah. And leadership for us can come in any form, of any age, of any class, right? So usually I find that the kids who are the biggest leaders on the team, and our last 2 years, it's been a kid who's a freshman and a sophomore. She's a sophomore for us this year. And she's flat out, not only the best leader I've ever had, but she's a sophomore. She's our leader, and everybody knows that. So she generally leads some of those conversations. We have a lot of highly intellectual kids, just period. Maybe not highly intellectual basketball kids. We got some highly intellectual kids at our school, and those kids lead the conversations. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to see how somebody who might not have a ton of confidence on the basketball court, but they have a ton of confidence in culture stuff, right? Yeah. And they love speaking up about it. Or it does come from a senior. This year, we only have one senior on our team. So the one kid who's been there and played for me for 3 years, now 4 this year, does like to speak up because she does know our culture. So you just kind of find that it comes in different forms and different fashions. Going back to another one of your questions, you said, kind of how does this happen and what kind of setting? And you mentioned the word retreat. So we did actually have a retreat this year. And so we spent 3 full days together, didn't leave the house. And we kind of really did a crash course on all the stuff we would have done. And we put it all into like one big, huge session, which was really fantastic. So a lot of those activities were the players just to themselves. So I gave them kind of instructions or showed them what we were looking for. And I said, you guys have whatever, a day, 2 days, an hour, 2 hours to talk about this. And then, you know, let us know. And then some of those activities, you know, were coach led. So again, instinctual for me, it just depends. Yeah. It depends what I'm getting from them. It depends what I want to get from them. Do I want to have an influence over whatever particular thing I'm looking for? Do I want them completely to come up with it? So the essentials on the team, they completely come up with that on their own. I'm not even in the room. And then I come back and they share them with me and we talk about it. And I'll say, okay, you guys said that an essential for us this year was going to be that we were going to be superstars in the classroom, whatever verbiage they chose. I said, let me just ask you guys some questions. If we're going to go on a road trip this year and we're going to come back really, really late on a Sunday, and we just flew across the country and we're back on a Sunday night, we come in at 12 o'clock. By the time you get from the airport back to your house, it's 1:30, 2 in the morning. Are you all going to school on Monday morning? Some of them were like, yeah, I know, coach, that like you kind of expect us to do that, but yeah, I probably wouldn't, or, you know, my mom would let me stay home. Okay. Then don't put that as an essential for our program. Cause yeah. If it's essential, you are all showing up on that Monday morning. And like, let's make sure that we already discuss these things before we hold ourselves accountable to it. Mm-hmm. Like let's select something that might be a challenge, but let's select something that's going to set us up for success too.
Do you like to have a certain number? Like if they came to you, had 9 essentials, or do you say, hey guys, come up with 3, 5, like something that's attainable. What do you think about the number there that, or have you ever had a group and you said, no, let's not do that one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So like the classroom thing was one of them. The way
that one was scrapped.
It was definitely scrapped. You know, again, it's just having a conversation about it. It's, hey, let's bring up some good and bads about the things. And that was all the things they chose. It wasn't just the one that I thought maybe not right. That'd be a great idea for you guys. And so definitely just talking more about it. So they come up with it. I'm not in the room. The coaches aren't in the room. They present them to me. They like actually do a presentation. They say, this is why we chose this here. I say, okay, cool. Let me ask you some questions about some of these things. And kind of vet it a little bit. Like, did you guys come up with that? Cause you think that's what I want to hear? Or did you come up with that because that's actually an essential for us to have a successful season?
Right.
That's it. We figure it out. I don't think I usually give them a number. Generally speaking, it's never been more, for sure, it's never been more than 10 different things. It's always more than 3. And so it's usually somewhere in between.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's really good. You've mentioned your assistants at various times throughout our conversation so far. How are your assistants? What are some of their roles at practice? And do you practice JV varsity together? Like, how many girls are in the gym with you? Is it just varsity?
Yeah. So let's go to that question first. So this is the first time we have a very small school at Sierra Canyon. So we have roughly 420 kids in our high school, but we are a preschool through 12th grade. Okay. So, so we do have a middle school team, obviously, and all that kind of stuff. This is the first year since I've been there in my 10 years that we had a JV program. We've never had a roster bigger than 18. Was crazy. One year we had 18. The first year I started, I had 6. Okay. And it's usually around 12 and 11. So this year we had 12. So this year we actually had enough kids that we were actually able to form an 8-person JV, or it was going to be a 20-person varsity. And so we kind of had to make that decision, had a lot of conversations with those JV players and their parents, and said, basically, this is going to be the best way that you guys are going to be able to get on the court and they're going to be able to find success. And obviously I've been around programs where we've had JV teams, but I personally had not been the head coach of a program, that ran our own. And I will tell you that I learned some really cool things, I thought, this year from having a JV program, that had I ran things the way, and I definitely can be off about this. I haven't been around a JV program in 10 years, right? So I could be off on how other people run their JV programs. I know that for certain. But the other schools that I had been at, when I was at a school myself, JV was, you know, you practice at the same time as varsity, maybe sometimes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you play before them in certain games. But it's pretty much two separate programs that are part of the same program, right? And so some things that I found that were incredible was that we didn't necessarily know we were going to have a JV team before we formed our JV team. So we were practicing everybody together at the beginning of the fall time. So conditioning, our team bonding, our team classroom sessions, our leadership academy, all that stuff, everybody was still together. We were still one program. And forever, I will keep that. If I have a JV team for the next 10 years, we are going to do all of our stuff in the preseason as one program. Mm-hmm. A couple of things I learned from that, we created an incredible bond between the two teams. And they definitely split up pretty quickly after that. And we had a fall league and the JV team played their games and et cetera. But I really found that the girls really got to know each other where they would not have known. It would have been like, you're on the JV team and you're on the varsity team. And that relationship that they built with each other to the point where they're literally friends wouldn't have happened if I would have separated the JV team right away. And so I think that's one thing that we will definitely keep no matter what the level of both programs are. What does it hurt to condition the JV kids, you know, with the varsity kids and include them, of course, in the culture sessions and classroom sessions. And so that was one big thing. And then throughout the year, we try to have as many separate practices as we could. But there was multiple times throughout the year where we would definitely practice together for the duration. Or we would at least start the first 30 minutes or 45 minutes together as well. So again, just kind of created a nice camaraderie between the two programs, helped each other support each other when we actually got to play the games. Mm-hmm. And then of course, you know, we're a small school anyways, but each kid knew each other, which was fantastic.
Yeah, that's what I've always done, mainly because we just have one gym and girls program and boys program and all that. But we practice JV and varsity together, I would say 85% of the time. Sometimes we'll do a morning practice with one of them, or I'll give JV off on maybe a Wednesday. But yeah, we've always done everything together. One reason is for space. And the other reason is, you're right, it helps camaraderie. And you see how those, you know, sometimes a freshman and a senior will kind of have a little bond and connect. And it just kind of helps when the, you know, varsity guys are watching a JV game, cheering them on, and vice versa, because they know them a little better because they've been practicing with them. And so, about assistants at practice, what are some of their responsibilities? What role do they play? How do you include them? Obviously you're the leader and the head coach, and how many assistants do you have at practices normally?
Yeah. So, I have three assistant coaches. One of those assistant coaches is really our strength and conditioning coach. So he's at every single practice. He's at every single game. At practices, his primary job, of course, is to get the team warmed up and then cooled down, and obviously be there for any like stretching stuff that they need throughout practice, in between practice, in between drills. But he's charting our competition chart. And so he's not there to be a basketball coach. He's there to be more of the strength and conditioning coach, right? So we have something we call a competition chart. And in some forms, it would be similar to, you know, what people have as their competitive cauldron. For us, it was kind of taking an idea like that and then really simplifying it to make it make sense for our program and our team. So basically the idea behind that is that we are being as competitive as possible in every single drill. And when you talked earlier about kind of how many drills do we have or items do we have throughout a day, we will have at least 10, no maximum of 10 activities where we're competing. So mm-hmm. there's 10 things always on the competition chart. And so we get points for culture things, thanking the passer. If you're in a drill and you thank a passer and it's legit, you're not just like throwing out arrows all over the place. We add that onto the list. So you get a point for that. Offensive rebounding is a huge part of how we play. So offensive rebound in any drill, you get a point for that. So we have a couple other little culture things on there, being a great communicator. And we talk about what that looks like and how that could get you a point. You get a point for that. And then we have all of our drills that are competitive. So you get a point for those things as well. It's a very simple formula. Did you win or did you lose?
Yeah.
So obviously some things are individual. It could be a shooting drill. Some things are obviously team things. So you get a point if you won, and that's it. And we tally them up at the end of the day, and somebody's winning. If you won the day, you get in, you get 2 points going into the next practice automatically. And then if you win the week, you get out of the Friday conditioning. We condition pretty heavy at our school, and getting out of Friday conditioning is a very rewarding experience. So we got the one coach who's in charge of the competition chart. My other two coaches are full-time basketball coaches, right? So there's three of us ultimately on the staff. And on our practice plan, we have three things. So we have the, somebody's in charge of the instant replay. So we have an, it says iPad replay on the sheet. So that person's really in charge of trying to pull over a kid kind of as much as possible, again, without, we're not interrupting practice to do it. Or they're the person who has the iPad that day. So I just say again, you know, Mac, go see coach real quick, and he'll go show her what she did right or wrong. It's not always something that you did wrong. We go over there and we look at that. So somebody's kind of in charge of running that day and establishing that communication and having that role. And then we have on our practice every year, we kind of relate our theme as much as possible into everything that we do, but definitely into our practices. So this year, our theme was our legacy. And so we had on our practice plan what we would call legacy criteria. And these are the things that are going to make us very successful in this drill. And so one coach was in charge of the legacy criteria. So before every single drill, you're supposed to shout out, you know, on this particular drill, you're looking for whatever, perfect passes and your stance and this blah, 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 blah. So they'll go through and tell everybody what's the legacy criteria. And then generally my idea or my role in practice is to conduct practice, and to make sure, again, the pace and the kind of smoothness of everything is running effectively. And we're getting into everything as quick and functional as possible.
Do you make the practice plan unilaterally, or do you kind of do it as a staff, or are your other coaches even at the school working, teaching alongside of you? How do you do the practice plan?
Yes. So we will have conversations about it. And it's one thing that was kind of on our list as a coaching staff this year that we wanted to do a better job of kind of dissecting practice after practice happened. We talk a lot naturally as a staff, and I think a lot of coaches do. It's mm-hmm. one of the things we love to do. We love to talk basketball, right? We love to talk about our team. We love to constantly throw out ideas and make ourselves better. And so our struggle is my two coaches are not on our campus. They both have separate jobs. Obviously they have separate lives. They have families, they have all that stuff. So, and they travel to get to our campus. So it's really hard after a practice when sometimes we're in the late slot and we're finishing at 7:30 at night, to sit there and talk for another 30 minutes. So, it was something we wanted to do better as a staff this mm-hmm. year. And ultimately I could say we probably failed at doing a better job, but it's really situational. And so, you know, they'll get in their cars and we'll get on the phone or we'll send text messages later at night when we're watching back film, and we'll kind of communicate that way. So ultimately I do the practice plan with input. So I'll send them a text, whether that's the night before when I'm doing it or the day of, and just say, hey, was there anything you wanted or anything? But usually it's occurring from multiple conversations throughout. So it's collaborative without us all sitting in there and
saying, and I'd say that's what a lot of coaches do. I mean, even coaches that work at the same school together, you rarely have the same planning period or maybe at the middle school. So, shooting at practice, how much shooting do you try to get in, and does that change throughout the season? And also the second part, what are some of your, I guess, best or favorite shooting drills, competitive shooting activities, however you want to word that? Because I know some coaches start out at the beginning, so fundamental based, so putting things in, they're like, we're just not getting a lot of shooting in. Well, then you can't gripe 4 or 5 games in. You're not shooting the ball well if you're not letting kids do it. Or are your players, like a lot of programs, you know, you need to come in the morning, get extra shots in, and things like that.
So this changed for me about 7 or 6 years ago. Just felt that I had grown up, again, it's how you get influenced, right? And so I had grown up in that old school, we don't have time for this in practice. We're not doing shooting drills. You shoot on your own. You get your 500 shots up before and after practice. If you're not coming in here for extra work, it's because you don't care. If you're not a good shooter, it's because you don't, you know, it's all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, you know, we go to a rigorous academic school and the gym isn't always free and kids travel to and from, blah, 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 right? So about 7 years ago, I was like, you know, this team can't shoot. We're really poor shooters. And then I kind of assess how much shooting we're doing in practice outside of how many shooting drills we're doing in practice. Yeah. So we're shooting a lot. And it was pretty much non-existent. And it was like, well, of course, you know, and it could have been ironic because, you know, we could have had a great shooting team and I would have been like, well, we're fine. Right. But we were really bad. And so I called up a couple different friends and I said, hey, what are your best shooting drills? Give me stuff that's competitive. Give me stuff that can kind of be measurable. And we can actually see if we're getting better at shooting. Right. And I came across a set of really great drills that are all time and goal oriented and so that they're measurable. Right. So if the goal is to make 150 and five, and we know that we're getting 100 and then all of a sudden we got 120, we're improving. Right. And if we ever hit that 150 mark, fantastic. Right. So I really like those. I like to gauge them with college teams that do it. I like to gauge them against professional teams that do it. And if the Sparks are getting 150 in 5 minutes then, and we get 150, well, great. This is fantastic. So I really like to get a lot of those in our bag to just kind of see, you know, kind of where we can measure. And plus that's really fun for the kids. You can say, you know, I got this from UCLA and this was what they do over there. I got this from wherever, this local college, and this is what their goal is. So it kind of gives them a fun perspective on things. So years ago, got these drills and I made sure that we started doing them every single day. And sure enough, our shooting percentage rose pretty drastically and we were a much better shooting team. And since then, and I was also a shooter and I love shooting drills. Like why wouldn't I let our kids enjoy having such a good time and having fun? So I make sure that shooting is in every single practice that we do. And we also will mix up our practices. Again, it's not always the exact same formation of where drills are laid out. And occasionally we'll do a super fun competitive practice where it's 10 competitive drills that are all shooting drills. And they're getting, you know, it's competitive with two different teams or individual, whatever it may be. And we have it charted throughout. And so we have like our competitive shooting days as well. So we got a bunch of them. I'm not going to explain them, you know, over the air because that would just be boring, I imagine, for some people. But I'm always happy to share some of the ones that are our favorites. But ultimately, most all of them are time and score related.
And do you track and record what a player is doing so they can see growth? And you can also say, hey guys, in 2 weeks you've made 850 threes and you've shot 1600. Like, how are you tracking this data? Are they just going to a coach or recording it in Excel, or what are you doing there?
Yeah. So the only things that we will track would be as a team in terms of the goal stuff. So we know that our record in five ball shooting, which is the goal, would be to make 150 in 5 minutes. We know that our record in 10 years is 163, which is really good. So we just know that number. And if we ever surpass it, and this year's group set that number. So if we surpass it, of course, we'll go into each day like, hey, it's 163. Let's try to get better than that. And so on the team oriented stuff, we just kind of have those numbers marked down, and have them memorized. For our individual shooting stuff or partner shooting things, we do record it. And so I have an ongoing Excel database. And so we'll just throw in what they have and if they improved it. And, if I know that we're of course doing that drill ahead of time and it's on the practice plan, I'll have a little side note of, you know, Isella has a personal goal of 2 minutes and 20 seconds in this drill so that they can know what they can try to beat that day.
Yeah. It's always been interesting how we've always told players, and I've been guilty of it, hey, get up shots on your own. Well, realistically, what are they going to do? I mean, unless your gym is open early in the morning, and then we're also telling kids get a great night's sleep as well, because you just got in at 10:30 on a Tuesday. So Wednesday, get some sleep, you know, or you don't have access to a good facility, or even a lot of kids don't even have a goal at home. So again, we've all said that, but you know, I would say half my kids don't have a goal at home or access to a good church gym or just anything like that. So that's something we need to be cognizant of, is we just say, get shots up. And you know, are you gonna have a rebounder? Are you gonna have to go get every individual shot? It'll take triple the time. Just a lot of things that we don't think about. Is there a particular way you like to end practice, with like a really competitive drill, or does that vary as well?
Yeah, definitely varies as well. So sometimes it depends on that, the type of practice we're having, or that I've planned to have that day. So occasionally we'll kind of have those mental toughness check days. And so we have drills that are really tough. And again, it's some sort of scoring component, a time and score goal situation. And they have to figure out how to get it done when they're exhausted at the end of a practice. And sometimes it's just a fun shooting drill where it's a target number. Sometimes it could be some form of, a 5-on-5 scrimmage or some sort of game-like situation. Generally speaking, we end it with some sort of free throw competition. So like the drill before free throw might be one of those things I just mentioned, but for the most part, we're ending with some sort of competitive free throw situations.
The day before a game, because you probably play, what do you do in California? What days of the week do you normally play on? Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Friday, Saturday, or is it?
Yeah, it kind of depends. Roughly speaking, it's for sure 3 times a week and sometimes it's 4. So Tuesday, Friday, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday.
Do practices look different the day before a game as opposed to if you have a practice on a Wednesday, but you don't play till Friday or Saturday? Do you go a little lighter on the legs or do you do things a little different, a little shorter?
Again, very, very situational and then very instinctual on my part. Do we look exhausted? Did we just come back from a cross country road trip? Did we have a really tough game on Tuesday night? Is Friday going to be really easy? Cause if Friday's gonna be really easy, I'm going to kick their ass on Thursday. Yeah. And I don't care. Is Friday going to be really tough? And Tuesday, it's all that is definitely situational and something that I'm very aware of. So always keeping all of those factors in mind when planning a practice period, no matter if it's game season or even preseason, or even nearing, the end of postseason. I will say though, that we are a program that practices for our opponents. And so not a lot of people have that same philosophy. So we're always going to go over your out of bounds plays. We're going to go over your top three sets. We're going to go over your main actions. We're going to do all that stuff. And depending on how much time we have, or either they're doing that for the 2 days before the game, the 3 days before the game, the whole week before the game, or just the hour before the game. Right. So that's definitely going to hit home. And then we're just always covering the stuff that we do well. So we're going to work on our transition. We're going to work on, our shooting stuff and our offensive stuff. And again, meticulous preparation. So we're trying to be as prepared for that game as possible. I will see the one thing that definitely does change is the deeper into season we go. We were in state playoffs, obviously. And as we were kind of nearing the end, practices were definitely much shorter, but we were still accomplishing quite a bit in that time. And we're still going pretty hard. I know some coaches try to kind of, there's the fear of, oh, I don't want somebody to get hurt before the big state championship game, or, let's save their legs. I have a strong belief that, of course, you can tell if your kid's legs are really getting hit, but we play 32 to 35 games a year in California. They're 16 to 18 years old. Like, they're going to be just fine. So
yeah, they recover pretty well when you're 16 and not 40, right?
Exactly. If anything, I'm trying to save my own legs, but
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Coach, thanks a lot for having this conversation. Any last tidbits of wisdom or things you want to hit on about practice that I didn't think to ask about or we didn't hit?
No, I mean, I love practice. I think it's honestly one of the reasons that I've been successful as a coach is a lot of thought and goes into how I plan for practice. So I'm always happy to answer anybody's questions. If anybody wants to ever reach out and have a conversation, whether over the phone or through email, I love doing that. So anytime, because I know everybody has a different situation, right? So what I say might not apply to, 90% of coaches, or one thing I said applies to 90% of coaches. Yeah. So always happy to just kind of, pick other people's brains as well and have conversations. Cause I think that practice is the best way we can all improve. Right. And the more we learn about running effective practices, I think the better you'll see your team will be in games and we'll be able to perform.
Mention briefly the best way to connect with you. Is it social media? Is it email? If a coach is listening, they want to connect with you and maybe get those drills you mentioned, what would be the best method?
Best method would probably be email. And then when I reply, my cell phone will be on there. So it's A Kamaki, KOMAKI at SierraCanyonSchool.org. And if you forget that, you could always find it on the Sierra Canyon Athletics website as well.
Okay. Well, Coach, thanks a lot for doing this. Congrats again on the recent state championship. We look forward to following you guys next year, and let's get together for one of these another time, maybe in 2022.
Sounds great. Appreciate it. Thanks so much for your time.
All right. Thank you.